Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. We are live from the Spear Education Center in Scottsdale, Arizona, which is a great place. Been here a number of times. Good education, good times, whatnot. And I get a DM on Instagram from Dr. Sunny over here, who's like, dude, we're here too, with some of his buddies. And I was like, dude, well, let's meet up at the happy hour, because they have these happy hours at the end of the first day of these things. And so Will, Dr. Jones, and I, Will, have you been on the podcast? You've been on the podcast before. Yeah, so I thought. Dr. Jones.
Twice.
We're here for the Restoring the Edentulous Arch, and then there's also Demystifying the Occlusion, one of their seminars. So without further ado, Dr. Sunny, introduce yourself. Welcome to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, man.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on. So I'm Dr. Sunny Verdi, or better known as my Instagram handle of DMD Sunny.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, we're hanging out here with Demystifying Occlusion, where the real talk happens at the happy hour.
You're exactly right. How was the course today? I have not done that seminar. I've done the workshop, but I haven't done the seminar. How was it?
It was great. The morning was very practical, and he talked about, like, he connected with the audience really well, because he talked about problems.
He being Dr. Frank Spear.
Yeah, Frank.
Nice. That's the other cool part, because he doesn't teach any of the workshops. So, like, I've actually never... You know, we had him on the show, but I never even gotten to hear him from an education standpoint.
But you know why he does that.
Yes, I know. It's a sales thing is what I think it is. But
I believe this is the last course that he does both days of.
Yeah.
But yeah, he connected with the audience because he talked about problems that everybody has. Like when you prep a tooth and you make the temporary and there's a giant hole in the temporary. Like what happened to your clearance?
Right.
Stuff like that. You connected away.
Yeah,
like,
that happens because all of us had that happen.
Exactly. So there's things like that. So he gets you in it right away, and he gets that connection, and he gives you practical tips on why things are happening, and you start to think on a different level. And then the afternoon, they really dived into things, and it was a bit over, I think, everybody's head, but, you know, just shows you what level that these guys are working at.
Yeah. So, almost like you should come to the workshop, probably.
Yes, exactly.
Classic. Okay, so tell me this. So how did you get into Spear to begin with? Because you're not from the U.S.
No, it's Winnipeg, Canada.
Go Predators, by the way.
Yes, Predators are rivals with the Winnipeg Jets.
That's right.
We beat them last year, though. So.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. We all got our ass kicked this year. Gosh.
Yeah, we did.
Okay, so how do y'all end up from Winnipeg down here in Scottsdale for Spear?
So there's two specialists in Winnipeg. Both from LSU.
Okay.
Who now work in Winnipeg. One's a periodontist, John Chernakis, and the other one's a prosthodontist,
cool,
Jose Viquez, and they started a Spear Study Club. So we've all joined it. It's all up to our game. Lots of conversations going on, share cases. And with the Study Club, you get to come to the seminars. So it's been our second year now coming.
That's way cool.
Yeah, great experience so far.
So how did... Tell me more about the study club, because in full disclosure, Will and I are starting one or co-doing one. Our periodontist is the one who's going to be leading it, not us. But we're starting next month, so I'm like super excited to do a Spear Study Club.
Yeah, it's great because they have modules, so they start the conversation with a video or a case, and you talk about it, you go through the whole thing, you talk about how you guys would treat it, and then they show you how they treat it, and then you compare. And then, you know, you get what you get out of it, what you bring, right? So if you bring cases, you're actively involved, you'll get way more out of it. And it's nice to connect with, especially with the specialists there, because you get to hear their perspective on treatment planning, what they're thinking of, what other dentists are thinking of. If you bring models mounted, you get a lot more out of it. So yeah, it's a really good experience.
Okay, so tell me about your practice a little bit, because we were talking a little bit before we went live here, and there was definitely some interesting things about your practice that I'd like to get into and discuss a little bit.
Totally. So we just bought our practice in downtown Winnipeg, right beside...
You being we being who?
We being myself, Dr. Murad Zaman, DMD Zaman.
Yep.
And Dr. Todd Honcharik, todaydental.ca.
They're sitting right next to us. So we'll kind of probably snag them, get them kind of round tabled here in a second. But okay, sweet. So the three of y'all, buddies,
yeah,
all in the same study club, decided to buy... a practice.
Yeah.
Will, I need you to give your headset to one of them. because I want to talk to them, I'll ask them questions about this. If you have a question, you relate your question to me. That sounds like a plan. Okay, so how did that come about? Because, okay, where have you all three been currently?
So before this, I was associating at a couple practices in Winnipeg. I've worked a little bit with Dr. Preshaw, who has been on the podcast before.
Yep.
And yeah, we were all connected before. We were friends in dental school, and we've had similar interests. And Dr. Todd Honcharik was the mastermind who pulled us all together and thought of the idea we should all work together because we had similar interests.
So, okay, Todd doesn't have a headset on, but Todd, what were you? Yeah, pass that over to Todd for a second. So, Todd, since you're the master behind this, where were you? Sonny was an associate. Where were you?
Where was I? I had.
Like, when did y'all graduate?
Okay, so we graduated in 2014.
Okay.
And we were all working at, well, Sonny graduated in 2016. So
okay.
Murad and I were in the same class. And we were both working at our own prospective places. And
as associates?
As associates,
okay,
right?
Cool.
Murad and I. And we were somewhat happy, but definitely saw things that we would want to do differently.
Sure.
So we decided to go out and start searching for a practice. And
then Sonny showed up.
Yes.
Not yet. Okay.
Not yet. So it didn't work out. We decided to kind of decide to forego our plans to buy a practice together. I was kind of looking on my own, and then Sonny came into the picture, and then I ended up buying the practice by myself anyways.
We decided to forego that.
We decided to forego that one too. So then I kind of was partners with both these guys, and then we foregoed the partnership. I bought the practice myself, and then we came back together. And we bought this second practice together. And now we're going to move that practice into a new location across the hall in this mall.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay. Sick. It's
so,
going
to
be amazing.
So, let me try and recap this. So we have, so Todd, you have one practice that you've bought. And how big is this practice?
It is a 4.5 chair practice.
Okay. And then the three of you go and buy a practice. That how big is that practice?
Three chairs.
Okay, so two smaller practices, and
yep.
You're going to merge them into a new location as a group now.
No, I'm not merging mine. I'm going to keep mine separate. We're going to merge that three chair, or we're going to move that three chair
into a startup. So basically, you're doing a startup.
Yeah,
with the three chair practice.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sort of a combination thing happening where you're taking over an existing practice but transitioning to a new space. So,
my question is, so obviously, if Todd, I'm assuming you're the only one working in the one, your smaller practice.
Yeah.
So, what is the game plan to grow this? I'm going to call it. Is it fair to call it a glorified startup?
Sure.
I mean, because how many what was the collections of this three chair practice?
600.
Okay, so 600,000. So I'd probably call that a glorified startup.
It's like a startup with extra opportunity, or
so we're merged, and then the plan is ultimately for that practice to support all three of you, or are you just in this more as like a business partner?
Right. Yeah.
And then Sonny and Masad, y'all's plan is to kind of run that practice as almost like a partnership kind of thing.
Yeah. So Sonny and Murad are going to work that practice. The guy we bought the three chair practice off of is still there as an associate. So he's going to be the third dentist there. It's eventually going to be an 8 chair practice. And then I'll stay in mine down the street and compete with these guys from afar.
Yeah, I think there's a long-term player. I'm the third fiddle kind of sliding in last minute here. This is Dr. Zaman. But yeah, I think the long play is just we're friends that kind of think the same way in terms of business and patient care and dentistry now. Like
sure.
We've been taking these CE courses and sort of following these things. I think Sonny's got to take credit for being the inspiration for a lot of it. Like, he's definitely upped his dentistry game, his IG game, that sort
sure.
of thing.
And dude, it's been IG does that to all of us.
Yeah, well, it shows you what's out there. And
it's like the great equalizer.
It's so you know, it's
yeah. Any more beers you can bring them.
I think
however many they give you.
I think Todd touched on this. We were happy being associates at these other practices. It's comfortable, but you know, once you start working with your friends, like Sonny and I have been working together since April. It's just a game changer. Like
So the two of y'all working together, and where are you working currently?
The little practice.
The little
one
practice.
We just purchased.
Yeah. So how is that going? Because look, my whole thing is I'm going to be the annoying, you know, devil's advocate or ask the questions that I think the listeners are thinking. And that is, how is this a practice that's doing $600,000 going to support the two of you and this older associate?
The honest answer is right now.
Well, we're in the growth phase. So yeah. There are days that are not the greatest. But
you're all in here. You're like, you need the one of y'all working anywhere else now. Correct?
So no, that's so we are still working other places. So I work. Good. We both work half the week there and half the week as associates because we need to live. And then we put our time in there to grow the patient base. There's lots of, you know, shaking hands, saying hi, waiting for new patients to come by. We're in a mall, so we do get a good amount of foot traffic. We get between like 15 to 20 new patients a month currently without, we haven't done anything.
Without doing any marketing, just because of walk-ins.
Exactly. Yeah, so cool. This just started. So we're in a way, our new location is going to be way more visible, way bigger and way nicer. And we're going to work on the whole marketing aspect of things to drive
so
that number up.
Then what is your strategy then to grow this practice?
Specifically?
Yes.
I think that we are trying to separate ourselves.
Because I know my answer for what I would say, but that's what I want to hear what y'all would say.
Well, I think we're really trying to separate ourselves and show patients that we really care and provide value for them in a different way than they'd find in other practices in Winnipeg. Of course, I'm not saying that that's what it is, but that's our angle on things. So we use dental photography a lot. And communicate that way with people. And there's been a huge response so far. There's people who have been in the practice for like 20, 30 years who've just kind of, you know, just like you've seen these courses, they've just been kind of put in the closet and idling by because nobody knows what to do. We start taking photos. We start talking about stuff. Already we're working on big cases that we're doing, you know, full arch reconstructions or full mouth rehabs. We're working on them now. So there's patients who are already saying yes because they've been looking for these solutions. We're just now communicating with them so that they can find that. So,
what technology do you have in the practice?
In terms of
technology,
really, there's not much, and I don't think that you really need to have crazy technology to do these cases.
Sure,
I think that the communication with photography is the biggest thing because people need to see what's going on. Once they're in on it, from there it's easy.
Dude, I can't agree more. I think that photography ultimately is probably one of the number one biggest things that any dentist can do to accelerate their practice. That's a cost-effective, you know, way to do it.
I get tons of students who message me on Instagram and other dentists, and they say, like, what should I do? What should I be getting? What equipment are you using? And I say, look, get yourself a good pair of loops and get yourself a camera.
Yeah, and so define camera for me, because does that mean intraoral images? Does that mean what kind of camera are you using?
We do a little bit of everything, right?
Yeah.
Like, we took a course with...
We took the When the Pictures Really Matter with the Adamo, Chewy,
Eduardo.
Yeah, so... We both have Canon 80Ds and, you know, our crazy flash setups. We have the soft boxes. So we just use whatever photography is necessary.
But the point being is that, because I think that's important to note, because one, you've invested in a solid piece of equipment there. And then two, you're utilizing, because I think the problem is I would argue you wouldn't be doing the type of dentistry you're already doing if you were just using intraoral cameras.
No, it's impossible because with intraoral cameras, you look at it, and even I, as a dentist, I'm kind of like, there's just some blobs here. Some are black, some are white, and there's some pink stuff around there.
With you the don't camera, have scale.
Yeah, and with the camera, you can see the detail. Like, we live in a world now where everything's HD. Anything that's like 240p is almost unwatchable to us,
right? I agree, yeah.
So with the camera, you get the detail, you get the quality, people understand it more. I've used intraoral cameras as an associate way before, and people said yes, but I know that they're just kind of... glazed over.
Dude, I love this. It's amazing because people, you're right, Sonny, because people will look and they'll message and they'll be like, gosh, what is it that y'all do? And how are you successful? How are you this? And it's amazing. At the end of the day, it comes back so many times to just fundamentals. And like the value in taking a nice set of photos on a patient, putting them up on a screen and asking the patient what they see is worth more than sometimes, you know, all the high-end, super cool, techie stuff that you can buy.
Totally. And sometimes you talk yourself out of things, right? If you go too crazy, you might scare patients, trying to overcompensate for something. I think with the photography, it says it
There's
all.
There's a definite wow factor. Like you were talking about setting ourselves apart, and patients say, wow, I've never seen this before. Or,
sure.
Wow, that amalgam looks really shitty. Like,
Was that hard for y'all coming into a practice where you probably had an older dentist not doing that with those patients?
He's been pretty great, actually. Like
he's tried to keep up with times. Like, so Murad and I are big into the biomimetic scene. So we do, you know, the immediate dentist sealing, mostly Emax restoration, rubber dam, everything.
So let's talk about, that's a good transition. So let's talk about the biomimetic scene, because my guess is a lot of our listeners are just like, what the heck did he just say? And what does that mean? So go ahead and define that for me. And then let's talk a little bit about that.
So it's definitely become a bit of a buzzword in dentistry. I think people use the word biomimetic a little bit loosely now. But of course, it starts with Pascal and his idea to recreate nature. And it makes so much sense when you think about it. But there's some fundamental concepts, which I think the most important being isolation and immediate dentin sealing. And when you look at the research, it just makes so much sense. And
tooth structure conservation.
Yeah, and exactly. And you, when you start practicing that way, you immediately see the benefits.
So give me some examples just on a everyday basis of where this is coming into play.
For me, when this started, so you would
have... How did you get into it? Yeah.
Yeah, so I have a patient come in. She's like 18, fractures a cusp off. And in dental school, they tell me, like, you need to prep a full crown. And in my head, you know, I'm looking at Instagram and stuff, and you see people doing like partial coverage restorations. It just looks so nice, minimal tooth reduction, minimally invasive. And I was like, how do you do that? Like, I'm just destroying the tooth. I'm telling them, oh, you might need endo one day. Like, I feel horrible. I'm like, there's no way this is the right way to do this. So I started to look into things. That prosthodontist in Winnipeg, he got us a unique opportunity to take a course with Victor Guerrero from Peru. He's a rubber dam specialist. This guy, I would probably say, is the best rubber dam ologist in the world. He doesn't speak English super well, so he doesn't often come to Canada and the States to teach courses.
Yeah,
so,
get him on the podcast.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, he's amazing.
And that, you know, it's funny because when you say rubber dam, like so many, you know, young dentists or dental students are like, oh, screw that shit.
Oh, so many people. When I told people, oh, we're taking rubber dam course, I took this course twice. That's how much I loved it. I took the same course twice with the same guy is how much I believed
in it. A rubber dam course.
Yeah.
And Will, you're missing this, man. These guys are talking me into a rubber dam course.
I've spent thousands on this rubber dam course. It has changed my practice. I go to work stress-free and happy every day.
So let's talk about it. So you get a patient come in. You're doing some fillings. You're rubber damming everything.
Everything.
Okay.
Unless it's absolutely impossible. Victor Guerrero, the guy we learned from, says that it's never impossible. I think there's some cases like when it's the, you know, sub gingival, like near the bone of a 47 from a 48 that was impacted. Like I can't always rubber dam.
I think those are second molars they're talking about.
Yeah, second molars.
Classic Canadian lingo there. I mean, goodness. 47.
Yeah.
47.
So in situations like that, you got to improvise, right?
You do.
But, you know, and I would say 95%.
I'd say the same thing on the right. I'm like, yeah, I can't isolate it. Yeah. Sorry, I got to do this.
But you know what the biggest difference is? You'll find is the clamp selection. Most people just have the, you know, the 13.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I have two clamps in my office.
I have a box of clamps. I would say of like 50 clamps.
Nice.
And there's so many situations where you just find a little clamp that's going to work in that scenario and it's a breeze.
You know, it's funny. And I do find that when I finally get the rubber dam on and like it's all isolated and done and whatnot, that like it is awesome.
Yes,
one,
exactly.
Like, for one reason, like the patient can't talk and they're not like trying to like open, close, which is a huge factor that I like.
Now, are you putting this on?
And two, before? You know, that I like.
Yeah. I always put
prep
my.
With it on.
I only prep.
Oh, you're prepping with it on.
Yeah, I put it on when I start the procedure. The only time I don't, I did this case recently, is when teeth are splinted together with composite you see from other countries. In those cases, I prep off, but that's the, you know, 2% of cases where I don't prep with rubber dams.
So you're prepping crowns, rubber dams.
So, yes.
So you're probably not doing a lot of crowns.
Exactly. So I don't do a lot of, you know, traditional crowns where the margins are like...
So do you have CEREC then? Or do you have like...
No, I don't do CEREC. I still do...
So you're doing traditional impressions and still being this conservative.
Yeah.
And totally. are these milled restorations? Or are they, what restorations?
They're pressed. I do EMAX pressed.
Okay. And you're bonding EMAX, them in?
Yeah, exactly. So a huge bonding protocol. So same thing, I had to freeze them, rubber dam for the cement, you know, the
how
cementation
are you
process.
Those?
The temporized process, there's two
now
ways.
Now you got me interested.
Yeah. There's two ways. There's the you know, traditional way with the acrylic, you know, Pro Temp or whatever you use. But the problem is you're so minimally invasive that it gets hard because you can't really pick it up.
There's usually something though. There's some sort of retentive element of the prep. And I use Nextemp, and Nextemp is like a super strong temporary cement. And I will tell every single patient, you know what, the properties of the final material we're going to use here, lithium disilicate, I won't say that word, but I could bond this to a flat wall. And so I don't need to make the prep like I would need to traditionally. So this temp is going to fall off. I tell every patient, the temp's going to fall off. It's sealed up with this small filling that I put on there. So the sensitivity is going to be minimized. But if it's really bothering you, come back in and I'll put it back on for you. And it honestly stays on 9 out of 10 times. It usually never falls off. So they're prepared for the worst. And then they come in, they're like, oh, doc, like it didn't come off. It's great. And
I found an even easier way, though.
Right now.
Explain to Sully what immediate dent sealing is, because I'm
we're explaining.
Before I get there, I got to tell you the easier way to temporize is if you do endo, you have a temporary endo material like clip or tempet. So you literally just squeeze this clear composite material in there with no matrix on, just as like a blob to hold the space. And you use like the teeth beside his undercuts, tell the patient don't floss, don't really clean it. You flick it off when they come back and everything's perfect.
That's kind of how I do it. It's amazing. Actually. That's interesting.
Yes. So, make sure you air block though. Well, and first, that's part of the idea.
Well, I do want to hear about immediate, whatever you said, Dentin sealing, whatever we're doing with the sealing of the Dentin. But you know, obviously then, gosh, I mean, if I was y'all, then I mean, getting into same day stuff seems like a no brainer at some point, just because of
That's the next
type of restorations
sure.
you're built off of. Because it sounds like you're doing, what percentage of these, let's call them not fillings, but of those, of the restorations that most people potentially would crown, what percentage of crowns are you doing of those?
I would say in situations where people...
Like full coverage.
In full coverage situations, maybe like 2% or 2 to 10% are crowns. And it's usually replacing old crowns. Yeah. If it's a tooth that never had a crown before,
you're very rarely actually doing a full coverage traditional crown prep.
Yeah.
So at some point, then it makes a lot of sense, then, just from a convenience standpoint.
It's easier. Prep less. It takes like 20 minutes or 50 minutes to prep a tooth. It's so fast.
So I think there's two, and I'll kind of give you again, I'm going to give you my immediate negatives to it or thoughts with it. One is without something like CEREC, the challenge of temporizing, it becomes more challenging for
it's
the
dentist.
It's
honestly not that bad. It's not that bad.
If you use the temporary endo material, it's 100 times easier.
It's pretty
You don't use an impression. You don't do anything. You just squirt it in there,
and then
cure, and you're done.
And then you just flick it out.
Are you saying only if there's endo, though? Or?
No.
The material is like
just
temporary.
The material, like the clip or the temper or whatever?
Yes, exactly.
Because you're not using an etch or a bond. You're just literally gluing there and holding mechanical retention of whatever it is.
Yeah, it goes in the teeth adjacent to it. Tempet, clip. Those are I use clip by Voco is the one I use, but
and basically they're not flossing. I mean it's just 2 week deal kind of.
Okay. Oh, they would rip it out with floss.
Okay,
sure.
and then the other big negative, which you know maybe just a Canada versus U.S. concern or thought is the cost relative to insurance reimbursement. We've found that it is insanely stupid and challenging that I could. You know, I could full coverage crown tooth and I will have no problem about getting that thing paid. But as soon as I start to be conservative, now all of a sudden I run the risk of not getting paid.
Oh, that's definitely a concern. I don't know how it works in the States here, but in Canada, we always predetermine things. So we'll send in the codes to the insurance company and say, here's what we want to do. What's going to be your say on that? So they tell us ahead of time, we're going to pay this or not pay this. So I'll send codes, for example, like an onlay code, and they'll tell me yes or no. But I'll also send in for a crown. But I mean, what's a crown these days?
I think that's the question.
Does the margin have to go to the gingiva for it to be a crown? If you cover all the cusps, but your margin's like 3 millimeters, super gingivally, is that still a crown?
Because we've found that like, what's the difference between an onlay and a 3/4 crown?
Yeah,
crownlay.
Exactly. So the words are so. I mean, you know, hopefully, like Great West Life and all the insurance companies aren't listening to us right now.
They're big fans. But big fans. I'm sure Delta. I'm sure Delta's an avid listener. Yeah. Hey, Delta, screw you if you're listening. Yeah, I don't think that they're listening.
I wonder though, like if they audited us and they asked for an X-ray of that tooth and like an intro photo of it and it covered the whole occlusal surface, how are you really going to argue that that's not a crown?
Right.
Like if you are prepping a 20 or like an upper second molar and the tooth is...
You don't have freaking retention on that anyway.
You're not going to have retention anyway. So you can just distribute that law across the whole arch and it's the same thing. Gotcha. So I think that as long as you're covering the whole occlusal surface, I can argue that it's a crown. As soon as you leave a cusp uncovered, then I would have a lot of trouble myself sending that into insurance saying I did a crown under that code.
Yeah, totally.
On a bite wing, it kind of looks like a shitty crown. So you get away with it on a bite wing. Even though intraorally it looks completely different, but on a bite wing, they're like, oh, it's not a good crown.
And
it's fine.
They're
just a bad dentist.
Yeah,
same thing. It's like, okay, well, is that an onlay or a 3/4 crown? Or like, I mean, it's the exact same thing.
Like even when you do a veneer prep on an anterior. Like some people wrap it around. Yeah, is it a crown? No. Yeah. Like the verbiage between us and the insurance companies.
That's what I needed to know.
Exactly.
That's what I needed to know. Okay. So now.
Immediate dentin sealing.
Immediate dentinal tooth tubule ceiling?
It's important.
Tell me about it.
It's the basis of all of this, honestly. It's so the concept
is... I feel
is,
very uninformed in this conversation.
The concept is, and I'm not going to say I'm Pascal on the topic, or Davey Alleman, who you need to speak to about this, because he will talk your ear off about immediate dent and ceiling.
And he'll be here tomorrow.
He's coming, oh, no, he's coming to hang out with us tomorrow. Perfect.
Maybe we'll have a whole freaking episode on immediate dent and ceiling.
You could talk
tomorrow
to Davey for 5 hours, and he still wouldn't get through all the research about immediate dent and ceiling. But the basic concept is that enamel and dentin bond completely differently. So people say you can't bond to dentin. It's usually because the enamel bond is ripping it away too fast. Whereas research has shown that dentin just needs time to bond. So the idea, if you're doing an indirect restoration, you bond the dentin only, not the enamel, and you leave it, and you're going to temporize the tooth and cement the crown on after, right?
Weeks later. Well, 10 days later.
So it only needs, I believe, 48 hours for it to reach its full strength, the dentin bond.
Wait, so, okay.
So this dentin bond, if you only bond to the dentin without the enamel or any forces pulling away on that, over time, that dentin bond is insanely strong.
It matures.
It matures, exactly. And it's stronger than the bond to enamel.
And how long does it take for 95% of that strength?
So if you wait, so let's say you're doing a direct filling and you just put your bond on, for example, and you cure that.
In like 30 seconds.
And you wait, no, 5 minutes. 5 minutes without doing anything, your bond strength has gone up 95% from what it was when you first cured it.
Now, do you want to just put the bond on, or do you want to put a layer of flowable on there too?
Okay, hold on, I got questions.
So this is different, yeah. The bond strength is different than bonded to the flowable. That's why I separate into indirect restorations, because that's one concept, and then direct restorations is another.
So let's talk about direct restorations first. So direct restorations... We're doing fillings. You typically, what someone would do is they would etch, you know, maybe they selectively etch, et cetera, and then they're going to scrub the bonding agent on for 30 seconds, then they're going to cure, and then they're going to place their material.
So the best thing is to use air abrasion. So we all have air abrasion in our offices, and we use it for every...
So you're rubber damming all of these, and then you're air abrading all of these.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So we don't use...
You're not using Blue Etch?
No, don't use Blue Etch. We use Clearfill SC Protect. The reason why is it has the MDBP monomer.
So literally, so no etching.
MDPB monomer.
You don't selective etch?
No, not selective etching, because you can't control where it hits the enamel dentin junction.
I always thought that was selective etching was crazy. Yeah. Like, yeah, well, I'm selectively etching until it goes everywhere.
Yeah. It just flies out of the tube as soon as you press the syringe. So there's papers to show that at the DEJ, if you etch the dentin with the self-etching bond, you lose all your bond strength. It just goes to shit.
You mean so with the Blue Etch?
If you use Blue Etch and a self-etching bond. So that's why we use air abrasion first. We wash that all off, and then we use Clearfill SC Protect. You just use the primer and the bond.
And the bonding agent is Clearfill.
Yes, yeah. Okay. It's by Karari. It's a two-step self-etching primer and bond separate. And then after that, you cure that. If you really want to develop your bond strength, you can leave it for 3 to 5 minutes and your bond strength will increase an insane amount. Or the other way is to build it up super slow, like 1 millimeter or less increments. And that's the flat horizontal increments, the best way to reduce the stress on the shrinkage.
At what point is this clinically relevant, or does it matter?
Oh, so
with direct restoration.
I think it's 100% clinically relevant. There was a study by Tagami, and this study really changed things for me when I saw this. Because when you look at it, they compare four bonds. Bond force, which is some, I don't know what it is. XTR, OptiBond XTR, which is three-step, you know, etch prime bond by Kerr. The Clearfill SC Protect from Curare. And OptiBond Solo, I think, was the other one they did. And when you look at the all-in-one bond, they what they monitored was the gap formation in a class 2 box immediately after curing. And you look at it, even after 10 minutes... There's a noticeable visual gap in the box.
So that's where recurrent decay happens. And
yeah.
That's why
right after curing,
fail.
Like you already left a gap. Whereas with the two step and the three step bonding techniques, you don't have that. And that's not even taking into account like the stress reduced protocol, 1 millimeter increments. So that paper was eye opening for me.
Wow. So basically, what you're saying is the number one reason that direct restorations fail is right there at the bottom of the proximal box. Part of that's because of when we just do our normal bond protocol and we cure that now we've got a gap.
Yes.
That then becomes the problem.
And because usually, what you're talking dental school is less than 2 millimeter increments or 2 millimeter increments. But there's research to support that if you do 1 millimeter horizontal flat increments, it's the best way to reduce stress.
Even with bulk, from shrinkage. Bulk fill composites and all that stuff.
So bulk fill works differently, but you lose half your bond strength with bulk fill. So in the biomimetic world, we don't use
bulk fill composites.
It's banned from our office.
Yeah, basically. It's considered cancer into biomimetic. Cancer with quotation marks in
biomimetic. So what flowable do you use? What composite do you use?
I use mostly Karari products. So I use the Karari flowable. Yep. It's called Majesty Flow. Have you used it before?
No, I haven't.
The price is not any different than anything else, but it is the best flowable I've ever used. I've used a lot. I've used the Voco 3M. I've used theirs.
That's Japanese.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Japanese make the best stuff. We know that. It's just the
Toyota.
Fact. Yeah.
It's the Panasonic of flowable.
We drove a Corolla here, even.
There you go. Okay.
I'm showing my age here.
So no joke. So let's talk. Okay, so let's go over to the direct restoration. I mean, indirect restorations then. So
yes.
How does it apply to indirect restoration?
So it's the same thing. When you're bonding.
I don't know anybody in the States. I don't. You're the first person I met that does this many indirect restorations without CEREC. That's what's mind-blowing to me. Am I the only one thinking that will?
Well, yeah, exactly. So that's one thing.
Oh, that's bullshit.
I think CEREC can look amazing.
Todd said that CEREC's not going to look as good because you're not lab tech. Well, first off, who gives a shit what first and second molars look like?
Instagram.
You do. Yeah, you do.
Like, TMD Sunny's followers.
Yeah, but like, really? at some point, look, well, that's because I'm a business owner and y'all, you know, look, I'm all about being successful too, okay? You know, at some point.
I will never argue that the anatomy I put into my, so I put anatomy into everything. If you look at my page, just, you know, I try very hard to put anatomy in direct, indirect, everything.
You got time to do that right now.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's a mindset. It's like, I always aim for the best. I'm not saying that people who don't put anatomy into their posterior composites aren't doing good work. They do good work.
Well, first of all, I'm not doing it. My expanded function is.
Yeah. So there you go. But it's still good work. I'm not arguing that point. It's just, for me, it's a mindset. So that's what
it inspires me. Well, the mindset's the same with CEREC, though. Is I would argue someone like that, then, would even love it even more, yeah, because now you have more control.
I 100% agree. That's the next step for us. Like, we just bought this practice.
Or you get the ability to empower a team member or train them to where they own it. I mean, because look, at some point where I'm going to, to me, where the buck stops is that it doesn't matter any of this that we're arguing about, because patients want that. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the biggest driver is going to be patients want same-day dentistry.
Yeah.
They want, that's what's going to drive you to do it, I think.
Well, same-day dentistry is incredible, right? Like, look at how much your revenue can grow with same-day dentistry. If somebody has a broken tooth, you do it the same day.
Like, patients don't want to take off 2 days of work.
And be frozen twice and go through procedures twice, rubber dam twice. Like, it's a huge thing.
Yeah, but you guys are talking about every patient like every patient is the same, and that's just not true. If you have a goal to how you're going to develop your practice and what you're going to develop it into,
sure.
If you're going to treat the top 2% of a city, and in a city like Winnipeg, where we're from, which is small and doesn't really have anyone catering to that demographic, if that's open and we're interested in that, let's do it.
That's a great point.
And then we can go and we can say, you know what? Your second molar, even though you're never going to see it, is going to look this good.
It's a great point.
We're going to use the best labs. It's going to cost more. And the patients are going to say, hell yeah, let's do it. I'm going to pay more for this.
But then then you're developing like more of a fee-for-service type practice, high-end practice, and a niche practice.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's still profitable. And I know where you're coming from. You're saying, I'm a business owner. I kind of want to do more volume to get those dollars. But you can do it the other way. Well, and you can just charge more to get those dollars.
But it also comes down to, and this is why I love dentistry. And this is why more conversations like this are so valuable and it's so good. Because at the end of the day, the biggest difference reasoning to me is because I don't like that type of dentistry, right? So if I don't want to do that type of dentistry, then
100%.
It doesn't matter, right?
Yeah. Like, 100%.
Not even, versus you know, if I were to be like, well, why? I could be like, well, why aren't y'all doing adult ortho? Or why are you doing soft tissue? You know, I could figure out something that you're not doing. Like, why aren't you doing more endo? You know, if the goal then, because it all comes down to, and this isn't discussed enough, is people have different goals. And it's hard for me to ever give advice until you know people's goals and where their perceptions are. Because if we just came to this table and started having a conversation, I was like, well, gosh, you know, why aren't you doing this, this, and this? Well, now, you know, here we are 30, 40 minutes into this. It's like, well, gosh, your goals are totally different than maybe the next person. And so it may totally. Not make sense to bring in X, Y, or Z.
And,
you know?
And some patients may not like that, what we do, because we're not the dentist for everybody.
Well, totally. Dude, yeah. I'm amen to that, brother.
But I think that's where, for us, photography comes in, because we take photos of all of our work because we're proud of it. And we show people, and they can see fillings adjacent usually, and they're like, yours looks amazing. Like, what's wrong with the tooth beside? And I'm like, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just... ours is just different. It's the quality that we put into our work.
And the mindset with these patients is now being transformed because, so I bought this practice off this retiring dentist who obviously never took any photos. And the patients are like, hey, why are you taking longer to do these procedures and taking all these photos and wasting my time? And then I start showing them the photos and they start seeing it. And now they expect me to take photos of their work. And they're disappointed if I'm not taking the extra time with them because now I'm changing the culture of the office. And these patients are coming to me and telling their friends to come and see me because they are us, like 100%. All three of us are doing this. And they want that experience. They want to know if we care enough to take photos and put it on Instagram. They're like, I want my case on Instagram. Like, I better see this up here. If you don't put my case on Instagram, was there something wrong with it?
Yeah.
Where did you learn biomimetic dentistry?
Where did you learn biomimetic dentistry is the question.
So my first intro was with the rubber dam course because that guy also practices that way.
Who is that?
So that was Victor Guerrero from Peru. He's a prosthodontist there. You got to look him up on Instagram. His work is incredible. It's Victor.Guerrero. Maybe DDS after or something. It's just incredible. So his work, so he's very biomimetic as well. And that was my intro because if you can't isolate the tooth, you can't do any of this stuff. You can't bond properly. You can't wait 5 minutes for a bond to mature if you don't have isolation. So that was the intro, was the rubber dam course. And I've connected with people on Instagram. I joined the biomimetic study club. It's a little chat group we have with guys like Davey, Jeff Davies, Alejandro. There's a bunch of guys on Instagram and WhatsApp that we all talk to. We all share cases. We connect with each other.
This is fascinating.
And so we give each other advice. And a lot of this stuff is based off of Pascal's book. You got to read it. If you haven't read Pascal's textbook, it's one of the best reads I've ever had. It's super easy. I've never read a textbook front to back, and that's when you definitely can. So you got to read that book. And yeah, there's the principles. They're not super complicated. There's ways to easily incorporate those practices into your daily practice.
See, what I would love to do is one of my assistants that's expanded function to like her, like become this passionate about this.
Yeah. It's because, a mindset, right?
Right. Like I'm a huge, you know, and y'all probably listening to the show and whatnot, like I'm huge into one, empowering my team to do other things, be bigger. And part of it is like, I want to continue to raise the bar totally across the practice. But like, for me, that's just not my thing. So, you know, at some point it's like, I want team members that have that exact same mindset to be able to do that.
How just for the patient or the people in Canada, because I don't understand how this works. How does this expanded person work? Like, what can he or she do?
So they can do all my direct restorations. So I have to prep the tooth.
Okay.
And then I walk away. So, and then in Tennessee, our hygienist numb. So literally I walk in and I prep and then I leave.
Wow.
That's insane. Amazing.
Can you talk about like wages or anything? Like how much is it?
Yeah. So dude, I'm like an open book. Yeah. I mean, I think it depends. Obviously I think what you probably see is around somewhere between 25 and, you know, 28, maybe getting up to $30 an hour, depending on.
And this,
you know,
is for the assistants, the expanded function.
No, expanded.
Yeah. Expanded function.
So the assistants probably make more, you know, from like the, I mean, I know assistants that probably start at $15, $16 an hour, and then they can work it their way up to, you know, maybe as much as $22, $23 an hour.
What does hygiene make?
In Nashville, that's a huge, you know, it's so geographical because in Nashville, it's probably 30 to 35, 36.
Okay.
But in California, like San Francisco, it may be like 40 to 50.
Right. Depends on the fees, right?
Yeah,
the
exactly. Fee guide, so, but point being is like, I mean, look, I'm a believer that if you bring a lot to the table, then, you know, I don't care if you're an assistant, but if you do, I don't know, $250,000 in Invisalign for me in my practice, well, you're going to get paid way more than the assistant that just assists, you know, like if you know, so, but again, it's kind of a mindset difference of, okay, how can I get my, because to me, then the team member is more like an associate than they are.
Well, what about sending those expanded function assistants to those courses that we attend?
I'm a totally believer in that. Total. I mean, I totally get that because like to me, I mean, I'll pay doctor fee. I don't care what it is, because they need to get that mindset. And that is the best thing for them to practice, because we all continue to raise our you know,
yeah, and
elevate our what we do, but we also then are then everybody's passionate about what we do, and then that's a really good business model.
Yeah, and no one's more excited than when they come to work and they feel like they're making a difference, you know?
No!
Like, if they know that their boss is investing in them and they can come in there and they can do something better today than they did yesterday, that's what
and gets they feel
people
valued.
Fulfilled.
Like,
they
so,
feel
that, fulfilled. So to me, that I see that could be somewhat, is going to be somewhat of a challenge for the three of you, because the three of you are so like-minded, that's good, but if you all like doing the same stuff, then the only way to grow a practice is to bring in more people.
I think yes and no. There's things that we definitely differ on. Like, I don't do any extractions.
Okay.
I don't do any surgery. If I see blood, I immediately put on a rubber dam, even for checkups. I don't want to see blood or saliva.
Yep.
So my partner, Dr. Murad, loves surgery because I forced him to.
Here, I'm going to put Dr. Murad on here.
And so Dr. Murad does all the extractions in the office, surgery. Him and Todd are both taking an implant course. So
what are y'all taking?
Implant Master course. It's by Hyosin Canada.
Okay, nice.
Do you know Hyosin in the States here?
Yeah.
So we're doing like a, this is like an all inclusive sort of thing. They teach you how to
kind of like continuum or whatever.
You got it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the last weekend of every month for 8 months. So it's like a pretty extensive course. I think it's like 170 or 180 credit hours. So
we're pumped. We're bringing something different to the practice too. Like,
yeah.
So I understand what you're saying. Like, if we all have the exact same aesthetics, biomimetic sort of principles.
Yeah. If you all treat,
we need someone doing crowns.
If you, well, not crowns, but if all three of you do restorative dentistry, that means that you then the same patient does not bring value to each of you.
Right.
Right. But if when you look at comprehensive, I mean, obviously we're at Spear, so everything is about comprehensive care. It means people have missing teeth. That means they have teeth are in the wrong position. You know, I mean, it makes more sense then for your theories to be aligned, but at the same time for each of you to start finding your own kind of niche in the practice to really complement each other, because then you become in-house referrals.
Yeah. I agree with you
100%. I think we're starting to diversify a little bit. I worked in a rural practice for a bit outside of the city, so I did a lot more surgical stuff, and I'm hoping to bring that to the table while Sunny's been more concentrating on the aesthetic stuff. So I think we'll diversify, and I think that's a really important part of the growth for practice. For sure.
Yeah, and there's a few more things that we haven't kind of, like, there's pieces of the pie that we haven't carved out. Like, there's still ortho. Like, hopefully one or two of us get more into ortho. One or two of us definitely get into implants. And what'd you say?
Partials.
Oh, yeah. I love partials. Give me a tooth-borne partial and I'll do them all day.
Yeah.
But there's opportunities. And, like, one of the huge things that we had, which is, I know that they always talk, don't go into business with your friends, but we're like truly, really good friends. And one of the things that we really value, this is pretty corny, but just like being together and working together every day and just being able to shoot the shit in the back and like talk about a case or talk about a patient or talk about whatever.
Well, dude, I can actually give a lot of advice in that area because, you know, I work with my dad. So it's like
the
ultimate thing, right? Because that can either be super successful or super bad. And it's the exact same thing from a standpoint of what we had to agree with and realize, just like the three of you have to agree with and realize, is that at the end of the day, your relationship is more important than anything else.
Yeah, you can't break up with your dad.
And right. I mean, and it happens though. I mean, like, I know one of our buddies that I could, you know, that literally like doesn't even like do Christmas together anymore as a family, because it can become that. But when you have the mindset of, look, we're going to put our relationship, that's the number one priority, then you work through the shit. Because what I will tell you is that it hadn't happened yet, but there will come a time when it will be yelling, ticked off, pissed off. I mean, it's happened with my dad and I. I mean, there's been moments where, like, I'm ready to leave, you know. But at the end of the day, we know that, hey, we're going to find a way to come back to the table and have a conversation because the relationship is the priority. And that's what the three of you have to do. And if you do that, then I truly believe it can work and it can be exponentially more successful than the alternative. It just has to have that common core of our relationship is more important than any business decision we make, any money, anything else. And then when that's the true core and you recenter back to that, even when you're pissed at each other, it'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I know that we all believe that. And you know, someday if we all work in the same office, that'll be super exciting. I know these two guys are killing it right now. So, and these guys are like, they're taking this 3-off practice. And like, I don't know if you could imagine like just coming into like this super old school office. And these guys are very modern thinkers and just trying to like slowly change things.
How's the team responded to that?
Oh, we've been super fortunate. Like this team has been there. I think the new girl, the newest member of the team has been there 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And the other ones, I think since 1984, 1983. So
and that's all working out well.
You know, they've been really responsive. I think the first time we spoke with them was...
That's surprising. Because typically what you see is like, you get a new football coach, you got to get rid of the freaking other coaches.
It's shocking. Like,
you got to bring in your people.
No, these folks have been... They've embraced this. Like, I think I was talking with Sonny about this the other day. It's a team that definitely, even though they've been practicing one way for many, many years, they've adapted super well. And when we do our meetings and implement new systems, we get this feeling that they are pulling for us to pull this off. And
they want us to succeed.
They want us to succeed. It's an amazing feeling. So we've definitely been super lucky with that.
And I think one factor that's been really important that we touched on earlier with the continuing education is that they come to the continuing education with us. And they told me, I mean, they've been working for 34 years. So when they came to the photo course with us, with Adamo and Chewy and Eduardo, and they said that was the first time I ever paid attention in a CE course. So that was incredible to hear. They're like, I love this stuff. So when we take photos or we ask them to take photos, they're totally involved and they love it. They see the art, they see the communication, they totally get what we're trying to do and they totally support it. Because there's patients who are like, what is going on here? Like, why is there a giant softbox here? Why do they have giant cameras? Like, what's happening? And you know, like that's where the real conversations happen, right? Behind your back. Like our office is not too far, so we hear what the patients say and they definitely are like, what's going on?
And if your staff's not buying in, they're not going to buy in. And I think initially when we said we're going to this photography course, these guys have been working since the 80s on amalgams. Yeah. And it was like, what the hell is this? And when we went there, they're like, we get this. And now they sell it to the patients.
And they tell the patients, they're like, you're going to see the benefit right away. And the patients agree after. And my assistant who I work with, she's been at the practice 30 something years. And she's like, I've never used a rubber dam before. And now in these past few months, I can't work without it. When she assists like the older doc and he doesn't want to do rubber dam for the amalgam or whatever, she's like, I hate it. I just can't stand it. I need rubber dam.
Hmm. That's amazing. Oh my
God. So they've bought, whatever that
we've been lucky in that. Stuff. That's one headache that we haven't luckily had to deal with. So
staff response has been incredible. I think we're really lucky in that sense. It's a small team, but they've all been great.
That's awesome.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's growing pains, right?
This has been a great episode. I love this. This is why I love podcasting. You all should start a podcast, by the way. I think you got a good group of people. You got cool ideas. Like, you all should start a podcast. I'm telling you, it's very liberating. It's good. It's good for the soul.
Is this how it works up? You just roll up with your equipment and just impromptu.
Roll up. Yeah. I mean, look, think about
That definitely helps.
The beers help. But think about how much I've learned. Like what's funny is, And part of it's my personality, but like I will go back and now like reach it. Like I'll change my entire practice philosophy based off a 45-minute conversation.
Oh, like podcasts I'll be like, Celeste, look. We should get CE for podcasts.
I agree. I'm like, Celeste, I need you to go learn about biomimetics. That's what I'm going to say.
Listen.
I'm going to say, here's the course you need to go take. I'll fly you to wherever it is. I'll pay for you to do it. I need you to make this a priority in our practice.
Here's a free biomimetic course. Go listen to the Newbie Dentist podcast with Davey Alleman, part 1 and part 2.
He's great. He's a great dude.
You will learn. You tell your expanded function assistant to listen to this. She'll come back ready to go. There's a course in October at the Beverly Hills Dental Lab. They have the biomimetics course. Yeah. It's a great course. I wanted to go this year, but one of our best, that one is definitely not free. You got to save up a little bit of dough for that one for sure, especially for us Canadians. Yeah. And but one of our best friends is getting married that same weekend, so I had to bow out. But hopefully next year I can go to that course. But oh god, no! The Canadian dollar 70 cents on the dollar.
70 cents, I think. It might be up now. Like, 75.
We spent $200 at Costco yesterday, and we're hurting today. Like we're.
I think Todd has the most Canadian accent. What do you think?
Oh, I agree for sure.
I was trying to figure out who had the most Canadian accent the whole time.
Todd is like, white, and we're both brown. So I mean, it makes sense.
But still,
you guys. Canadian, like, you know, white parents too. So
That's true. That's true. Where are your, did your parents, are they native Canadians or are they immigrants to Canada?
No, we're both first generation. So right. My parents are from India.
My parents are from Bangladesh since the 70s. So
yeah.
Yeah.
And they've assimilated pretty well, but there's definitely some things that
they still have accents. So
yeah.
Our parents still have accents.
Oh yeah.
Definitely.
I played golf yesterday with a guy, Vic, named Vic. He was Indian from do what?
Where'd you play?
Golf.
Golf.
Yeah, with
that's his accent.
That's my accent.
Tennessee accent.
What did he say? Golf.
And it was great. But it was funny hearing because his accent was still pretty strong because he had moved over. But yeah. Anyways, but,
brown people are good people.
Oh well, gosh, one of my biggest mentors is freaking Tarun. One of my biggest.
Thanks for advocating for the Browns. That's great.
I mean, Bay Ray's on the podcast. Why do they gotta be so bad?
We are supportive of all cultures. Millennial podcast. If you're a millennial, I'm in. Well, guys, I really appreciate y'all. Being so kind to share your story and tell us this. This has been fun. Y'all definitely everybody needs to check out them on Instagram.
DMD Sunny
at DMD Sunny.
At DMD Zaman.
At DMD Zaman.
And at todaydental.ca.
At todaydental.ca.
That's his website.
That's
his Instagram
handle. A little bit of a complicated one, but we'll give it to you. All right, everybody. We thank you for joining in, and we will see you next time. Hey, by the way, we are terrible at this, but if you like the podcast, go on iTunes, go on whatever you're listening to, give us 5 stars, review us. We appreciate that. And please be in touch. Hit up me and Dr. Payray. At Dr. Payray on Instagram and, of course, at Millennial Dentist. We will see you next time. Work smarter, not harder.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.